from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Lake County, Illinois Sheriff Mark Curran, defense attorney David Serta, and Peter Bensinger, the former head of the DEA. Our program tonight coming to you from our studios, Sirius XM Studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you would like to email us a comment, our email address is btb@museum.tv. That's btb@museum.tv. Well, tonight for the next couple of hours, we're going to be talking about something that we don't talk much about on talk radio anymore, and that's crime. Crime really has sort of fallen off at least the national agenda, at least in recent presidential campaigns, where for many decades, it was a prime topic of discussion every 4 years. And yet, with the decline and the economic downturn, there are predictions that crime will come soaring back, and people are predicting that the crime rate will rise in the country. And we're also going to put it in context with something that we have talked a lot about on this program, and that's illegal immigration. Is there a relationship between crime and illegal immigration in this country? If so, what is that relationship? You know, the image of those coming to this country is that they're coming to the country because they want to improve their economic life, their lot in life. And yet there are some that suggest that people who are coming from Mexico, primarily Mexico, are coming here to do to either rip off our system or they're engaged in crime. We're going to talk about how extensive that is on the program this evening. Also, we're going to be talking about growing violence, gang violence. There's a group called MS-13. They're originally an El Salvador gang. In the second hour tonight, we're going to be talking with a detective and author from Los Angeles who's going to be talking about the spread of M-13 in the streets of America. Allegedly, there are 50,000 strong. They operate allegedly in 242 cities. We're going to be talking about that. And last week, a Republican congressman from California, Jerry Lewis, said that in his view, he thinks gang violence, especially violence that is spilling over from Mexico, is more of a security threat than anything that's happening in Afghanistan. We're going to be talking about that as well, and certainly the growing violence in Mexico, over 6,000 drug-related murders this past year, including a major general in the Mexican army who was sent into Cancun, Mexico, to clean up a corrupt police force. He was shot and tortured just a few days ago. We'll talk about the growing assassinations, the beheadings of police officers, police chiefs, anyone standing up to the drug cartels in Mexico. We're going to be talking about all of that under the broad subject of crime and crime in America and the impact and the relationship also between our neighbor to the south, Mexico. Has Mexico become a narco state? When you talk about gangs and violence, you generally think of big cities. But also, gang violence has spread to suburban areas and rural areas and collar counties, and we're going to talk about that. And I want to begin by welcoming the sheriff of Lake County, Illinois, which is just north of Chicago. And Sheriff Mark Kern, thanks very much for joining us on Beyond the Beltway.
Thank you, Bruce.
And let us begin by asking you to sort of describe the gang and the violent problem that you have to deal with as a sheriff in a collar county to a major urban area.
Well, Lake County is approximately 800,000 people, and it's, as you mentioned, borders Cook County to the north. So, in essence, we have the same problems that the city of Chicago has as they carry on up north into Lake County. Chicago was the murder capital of the United States last year. We're suffering the consequences of the spillover effect there. In Illinois, you have two major nations of street gangs, the Folk and the People Nation, the Latin Kings, the Folk Nation, the Gangster Disciples, and in essence, virtually every other street gang falls within one of those two lines down the middle of a paper. With regards to gang violence, Bruce, I can tell you this. All of the drug trade is attributable to gang violence, with very few exceptions. Virtually all of the drugs that are out there. And
but is there a link? The key question I want to explore tonight: is there a link between the gang violence and the gang structure? Is there a link with illegal immigration? Is the gang structure, is it fueled by illegal immigration?
No question. They have a substantial corner on much of the market in terms of certain neighborhoods. With regards to my jail, and we've been recognized by ICE as one of the premier law enforcement agencies in the United
States. And that's Immigration and Customs Enforcement?
Right. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, formerly INS, is one of the premier law enforcement agencies in the United States in terms of a local federal partnership. And as a result of that, they've come into our jail and done audits. 21.5% of my jail was illegal immigrants back in August of last year. Over 20% most recently, only a couple weeks ago. These are people that are committing violent crimes. Absolutely half the murders in Lake County in the two-year span of in a year span, 14 murders, half of them were illegal immigrants, many of the violent sex offenses, lots of the drug trade. So there's no question that illegal immigration has a consequence of street gangs and also has a consequence of drug trade.
Peter Bensinger also joins us, former head of the DEA Drug Enforcement Agency, appointed by Gerald Ford, also stayed on for 4 years of Jimmy Carter. What is your assessment of just the link between illegal immigration and major drug gang problems in the United States?
It's clear, and it's present, and I think the sheriff reflected by the statistics. One out of five people in his jail are illegally came into this country. Most of them are involved with violent crimes, and most of them were involved with drug crimes. That's a disproportionate percentage to what would be the population of illegal aliens in the United States. The second factor, Bruce, and this gets overlooked, is that we cause part of the problem of violence by the ready availability of assault weapons and guns. The laws in Mexico are strong against gun control. So these gangs operating in Mexico and in the United States have a lot of high-powered weapons. And when they get into this country, cash goes south, drugs go north, weapons go south.
David Cerna joins us. He is a defense attorney. David, what's your sense of this bigger, broader issue that's on the table this evening?
Well, to be fair, I'm a civil rights attorney.
Right, civil rights attorney, right.
Who does some criminal defense work. I want to begin by agreeing with Peter on the madness and stupidity of having legal automatic weapons where this kind of carnage can be inflicted on people. I think that when you're talking about illegal immigration and gangs and the fueling of drugs, they don't go one after the other. We have a huge issue with illegal immigration. There are 12 million people here illegally, but they're not fueling gang violence. And if you go to the Cook County Jail, you do not see these percentages of illegal immigrants in Cook County Jail. It's really people in this country.
I want to follow up on that. 1-800-723-8029. I think we have disagreement on that, and we'll talk about it when we come back. From Fresno, California to Bakersfield, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. And David Cerna, you were about finishing up a point, but I want to let you finish your point.
That, as you said in the opening, I think millions of people come to this country for a better life, better opportunity to work hard and to try to better themselves and leave places where there are problems with law enforcement. And there's a minuscule percentage of people who come here illegally to become part of the drug trade, and that they do not – and the drug trade is not responsible for the tremendous problems we have in the with street gangs, et cetera. They're a part of it, but they're not the principal factor.
So you see there is a street gang problem, but you say that's an indigenous problem. It's not related to those that are coming from Mexico and joining those groups.
Only in the most tangential sense that there are some people who are part of the drug trade who come here illegally to work in the drug trade in this country. but there's a very small percentage. And if you go to Cook County Jail, you don't see these people. People who are here illegally do not want to get involved with law enforcement. They don't
Sheriff
want to break any laws.
Would you agree with that?
No, then they're deported.
I would disagree. First of all, we don't know what Cook County Jail has or doesn't have. Cook County, back when Harold Washington was mayor in 1987, declared themselves a sanctuary city. Back in 2005, they revisited the issue with Mayor Daley and once again declared themselves a sanctuary city. What that means is that law enforcement cannot cooperate with Immigration and Customs Enforcement on any level. Also, they cannot ask a suspect, a defendant, a terrorist, whether or not they're here illegally or not. That's what the city council has done to the city of Chicago. I mean, that jail could be, and I would submit to you at times is, bursting with illegal immigrants that are involved in the drug trade, that are involved in violent crimes, and it has repercussions and devastating consequences on the city being the murder capital of the United States. You know, the city council has pulled one over on the citizens of Chicago, and they've done so, I believe, in pandering.
Why isn't I
was going to ask the same question,
why
Mark. Wait a minute. Why wouldn't the state's attorney of Cook County, and I have good respect for Dick Devine, is this a city council ordinance that you're telling me about, Mark?
City council ordinance, but the jail at 26 in California is in the city of Chicago.
I know perfectly well where that is.
We can't trump state law. City law doesn't trump state law, and people who are here, you'll find out at a bail hearing whether they're here illegally or not.
Yeah, I'll tell you something, David. This is the worst state in the nation, arguably, in terms of illegal immigration and enforcing the laws. Peter Roskam rightfully called it a sanctuary state. We have, in essence, been sued by Department of Homeland Security when Chertoff was the head of that agency for failure to comply with E-Verify. We've had shown no interest in complying with that. We've been sued. Jesse White's office has been sued for driver's license and failure to
David's point? I want to just come back to David's point, and that is, again, the image is you have the struggling Mexican worker. He sneaks into the country. He finds a job. He works hard. He sends the money back to Mexico. And the last thing on earth he wants to do is to get in trouble. And so he wouldn't do anything that would get him involved in. Now, in your view, Sheriff, what percentage of those that are sneaking into the country fit that description?
There's probably a substantial percentage that fit that description, Bruce. You know, my Catholic faith wouldn't allow me to simply go after these people solely on the basis of hatred or bigotry. It's a matter of rule of the law, though. I think when we cease to be a nation of laws, that's a slippery slope. In many instances, you have people that come here, they want to work, but, you know, they can't watch the kids, what have you. And the kids are out gangbanging, and that's in essence has transpired. Time and time I've seen, again, 15 years
David,
as a prosecutor.
I think
not, because then the whole family would be deported. They do not what they want to take, you know, care that their children do not get involved in gangs and do not break laws. You know, immigration is a big issue. There are 12 million people here illegally. We should reexamine our laws. I think there should be more legal immigration, more documentation of people here. But the gang issue and the drug issues, think about who's buying all these drugs. Americans are buying all these drugs. They shouldn't be buying all these drugs. Why are they buying all these drugs? They are creating this problem, not illegal immigration.
They are. Isn't he right?
No argument with that. One of the biggest problems we have in this country is the failure to recognize that the demand of these drugs fuels a lot of the violence. And one of the problems is people don't realize what the drugs do. The drugs are dangerous. They do cause addiction. They do cause overdose death. They do cause aberrant behavior. And we have a pendulum, Bruce. Over the years, you and I have seen it. Sometimes you get strong law enforcement. Then you get prevention. Then you get treatment. We need all three and education to work to curb drug abuse. One thing that isn't known is that there are fewer people using illegal drugs today than there were 30 years ago. Today there are about 20 million people, that's too many, using an illegal drug at least once a month. In 1978, When I was at DEA, in the middle of my tenure, we had 25 million people doing that when we had 20 million fewer people in this country. So something has happened in terms of reducing overall consumption of illegal drugs. But the violence that goes with it, the importation of drugs from Mexico and Colombia and elsewhere, continues.
Now, you said during the last break, when I had gone through the opening comments, that there have been 6,000 drug-related murders in Mexico last year, and we're talking about beheadings and assassinations of police officers and everything else. Although that's not good news, you say that that's a reaction to maybe a less corrupt, more aggressive Mexican government crackdown on drugs.
Exactly right. What has happened in Mexico under the president, Felipe Calderon, has been that he's put out the army and military and forces into areas like Culiacan and Hermosillo and Tijuana and other places near the border and cracked down on the cartels, and I had the police not look the other way. As a consequence, the cartels, instead of letting the drugs pass easily through the U.S., into the U.S., find their way being blocked by police. So they're retaliating. And there have been leaders of the Mexican cartels extradited to the United States, over 100 of them in the last year, major figures of the Sinaloa and the Gulf cartel. The cartels are fighting each other for turf and fighting against the Mexican police to intimidate them and to scare them and to create a problem. This, to me, is an indication that they're getting hurt. And I would look at one other thing just to finish this, and that's the price and the purity of the drug. Over the years, the best way to measure if drug enforcement and prevention is effective is to see if the purity of the drug goes down and the price goes up. When that happens, there's less available. And that has been the case with several major drugs. And that's a positive sign.
Sheriff, and then we're going to go to calls.
Right. Just to play off what Peter Bensinger was saying, in essence, we've had 20 heroin overdose deaths in Lake County since November of last year. And heroin, as Peter would tell you, comes from a couple regions of the world. One is the Golden Triangle of Asian nations, as well as the other being Afghanistan. And it's foolhardy to think that heroin that comes here from Afghanistan would, in essence, be safe. I think that logic tells us that the people that are producing the heroin over there, that are shipping it into this country through Mexico, that they're not losing sleep to see our children die from overdoses.
We're paying for the Taliban's guns by consuming heroin in this country. And I think that it's a national security problem, and I think we should look at a different approach. This is not a supply problem. You're not going to be able to cut off the supply. It's a demand problem.
Well, it's both a supply and a demand problem. The most of the heroin coming into the States does come from now even Colombia, as well as Mexico. And the Afghan heroin, which is the biggest producer of opium, goes mostly to Europe, but it does get here too. And well, it's deadly.
What I meant to say is that you're not going to be able to solve the supply problem.
Why has the demand gone down? Is the usage down? Why?
A couple of reasons.
There's a success to that then. Right?
There's a success. Because you're going after the money. We're seizing over $2 to $3 billion a year of assets of the traffickers. You're putting people who used to be impervious to U.S. jails in prison in the United States. Colombia and Mexico are extraditing their major figures.
Peter, you're shaking your hands.
Well, David,
I'm
David,
shaking
David,
my,
David,
I'm David, shaking my head.
David and I don't agree because he thinks that if you just waved a magic wand and said, why don't you legalize all the drugs, there'd be no problem. Now, in England, they tried that. I was there in the 70s. They said, look, let's make heroin available to anybody that wants it. You can get it at a chemist shop, at a what we would call a pharmacy. So they would sign up, and they went and got their heroin at a legal dosage, And you know what happened? Instead of reducing the imports, they tripled because the addicts wanted the more powerful stuff.
I want to let David...
But let me just finish the point.
Just quick,
10 seconds because we're going to a break.
10 seconds. Instead of having less drugs on the street, there were more because they sold higher purity, much more powerful stuff.
The other side of this debate, when David Serta comes back and everyone else, I'm Bruce Dumont. From coast to coast and border to border, your telephone calls. We've got lots of callers on the line. We will engage you with calls when we come back to Chicago. From Worcester, Mass. To Seattle, Washington, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. One of our guests this evening is David Serta, a leading attorney, a civil rights attorney, and also he comes from a distinguished family in the county of Cook, where we do this program. His father was the first Hispanic ever elected countywide in the state of Illinois many, many years ago, 1968. Also joining us this evening is Sheriff Mark Curran. He is the Republican Sheriff of Lake County, although he was elected as a Democrat, and you switched parties less than a year ago. Why?
A number of reasons. I was a conservative member of the Democratic Party, and I think the Democratic Party has consistently moved further to the left. I'm much more at home in the Republican Party. I articulated a number of reasons in terms of corruption and the system of Cook County and the patronage system and in essence, an oligarchy where family positions are passed on from one generation to the other, and it just did not seem as though there was any...
Did a lot of people get ticked off at you when you switched parties?
No question they did.
But they'll have an opportunity to vote for you or against
exactly.
you.
Exactly. You know, especially people that are on the far left. I've had, you know, people that were elected as Democrats that have said, you know what, I understand you said it was a matter of conscience and I believe you, and that's fine.
Peter Bensinger also joins us. Peter Bensinger is the president and chief executive officer of Bensinger DuPont. That is a privately owned professional services company that deals with companies that need help in making and promoting a drug-free workplace. For 5.5 years, he was the head of the DEA in the United States, appointed by Gerald Ford, kept by Jimmy Carter, also former director of the Illinois Department of Corrections and the Illinois executive director of the Illinois Chicago Crime Commission, and has spent most of his life in crime fighting. And before we take calls, and we do have a lot of calls, David, I was going to give you an opportunity to respond to what Peter had said in the previous segment.
Well, your question was, why has drug consumption gone down over the years? And I think that's because of better education. We're spending billions of dollars in trying to cut off the supply and incarcerating hundreds of thousands of millions of people. People are being killed wantonly over drugs. And I think that we have to, as I think five secretaries of state have said, Republican and Democrat alike, and conservative Republican, James Baker, Henry Kissinger, Cyrus Vance, you can go on, have suggested that we legalize drugs.
And I've never heard Henry Kissinger say that, David.
There were five, and I think it goes back to Kissinger.
I don't think you're giving an accurate statement. I saw him last June at the Gerald Ford.
Well, I'm certain that I'm trying to go back. It was five in a row, and so I don't know if it started with – I know that it went from the Carter administration through James Baker.
You're talking about marijuana, not everything.
No, you're really – well, to get to my point, though, is that we're spending billions of dollars and we're funding terrorism by consuming illegal narcotics in this country. And if we spent the money in education – and treatment, we would reduce the violence, undercut overnight the funding of this illegal enterprise. And I think that it would still be a monumental problem. And I'm not saying that we're not going to that you know, using drugs is okay. If you're driving, you know, under the influence of narcotics, if you want to have a job, you're not going to be able to do this using drugs. But that this is such a tremendous problem that we've been fighting since 1968, when I remember Richard Nixon talking about the war on crime.
I want to follow up on this, but I want to ask you a question that we talked about on this program, and that is Afghanistan is one of the major producers of drugs in the world. And during the time of the war, the initial portion of the war in Afghanistan, there was discussion of whether or not the United States government was going to destroy the poppy fields there. and the U.S. Department of State decided not to do it. Had they done it, what would the effect be right now on the ability of Afghanistan to operate as a country?
I think it was a serious mistake not to spray the poppy fields. We did it in Mexico in the 70s. The Mexican government did it. And the number of overdose deaths from heroin went from 2,000 a year, 1976, to 800 in 1980. It works. You can destroy the poppy fields. And the State Department's decision not to do it was a political decision, probably, from their perspective. But in
But what
fact,
was the politics of it?
I think what happened for me is it put money in the hands of the Taliban. They don't make money if there are no poppies growing. And if they destroy the poppies, they're not going to be able to get the money to buy the guns and the rockets and to support the troops. So my hope is, even though it's 5 years late or 7 years late, that they will be aggressive in destroying poppy fields where they're grown.
We've got to take some calls. Let's go to Austin in Austin, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead. Nice to hear from Texas tonight.
Thanks, Bruce. Bruce, are you familiar with Alex Jones?
No, but refresh me. The name sounds familiar, but refresh me.
Well, I don't know if I can summarize who he is, but I guess he's one of these black helicopter guys, you know, a lot of conspiracies and all that kind of thing.
Right.
But he's since the market crashed, he predicted that the market was going to crash, and so he's gotten a lot of credibility.
Okay, and what does this have to do with our topic tonight?
Yeah, well, he has a two-hour show before yours.
Okay, all right, that's where I know the name. He's on before me on KLBJ. That's where I know the name. Kenny Raymeyer is on after us. Yes, go ahead.
He mentioned the drug cartels in Mexico and where they're getting their weapons. And he said they were getting their assault rifles and grenades and all that from the Mexican military and from the Mexican police. They're not going up into the United States to buy these things wholesale. They're getting the assault rifles and all the heavy equipment, and most of all the ammunition. You know,
You say they're getting the ammunition from the Mexican government, and then they're using it against those in the Mexican government that are trying to fight the gang war.
They're bribing military officials and police departments. And that's how they're getting the...
Let's let Peter Bensinger respond. Go ahead, Peter.
There may be some of that going on, but a number of the major cartel investigations have identified the weapons as coming from vendors, wholesalers in the United States. I could give you, Bruce, a list of this. I'm sure the local DEA office in Chicago, Gary Olinkowitz, could confirm this, but the weapons, for the vast majority of them, being used by these cartels, are made in the States and sold in the States to those cartels.
Let's go to David in Boise, Idaho, listening to us on KBOI. Go ahead, David. Are you there? Line three.
About illegal immigration and the use of legal firearms that each citizen has the right to bear and own. Essentially, I have a real problem with any kind of conversation that tries to limit our ability to own and protect ourselves with firearms based on illegal immigration. I know Eric Holder, the Obama administration attorney general, is heading down this path. I think this is something we really need to be leery about. If Obama is going to be aggressive and bipartisan and bold, he needs to legalize drugs, and he needs to enforce our ability to own and protect ourselves with firearms.
Well, David Serta.
You know, I'm a civil libertarian, and, you know, Supreme Court decided that people can have firearms. You can still restrict the firearms you can have. And I've never had any problem with people having rifles, shotguns, and would never advocate taking those away. And if you think about what happens, if someone has a rifle and is walking into a school, you are going to see the rifle. But if you have a little semi-automatic weapon where you can pump clips in it, you can slaughter people in a school and in public places. So there has to be some restriction on the arms that you can bear. And we should not allow the production of military weapons.
Okay, go ahead, Sheriff.
Thanks, Bruce. Just a couple things. One, with regards to the argument for legalizing drugs, I think that once you have children, you realize that that is just a bad argument, and you don't want to see that. Heroin, cocaine, these drugs take very little attempts to become hooked on them. And once you're hooked on them, the consequences are just devastating in terms of a life, and a life that is dealing with a terrible burden or what have you for as long as you're on the face of the earth. And with regards to the drugs that are coming into this country, and Peter will substantiate what I'm about to say, almost all of them are coming in through Mexico on the ground. Some are flown in, but the overwhelming majority of cocaine, heroin, these cannot be produced in the United States. Marijuana is hydroplane, but to a small extent in the United States, it's coming in through Mexico. Methamphetamines are coming in. So almost all of the drugs that are here come in from an open border with Mexico.
Is there anything more that the United States government should be doing to try to stop the inflow of drugs into the country? That's the question for Peter Bensinger. I'm going to give you a chance to think about it. When we come back, we're going to hear the answer and take more calls at 1-800-723-8289. From El Paso, Texas to Grand Rapids, Michigan, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Peter Bensinger, the former head of DEA, is with us. And Peter, I had asked you before the break, what is it that the United States government could be doing to stop the flow of drugs into the country? Because obviously that's the supply side.
90% of all the drugs, the illegal drugs in the United States, are imported. 90%. What has to happen to reduce that flow has to happen in many places. One, we have to reduce our demand. Two, the supply countries, Mexico, Colombia, Afghanistan, and Southwest Asia, and the Golden Triangle, have to have strong enforcement efforts to destroy and reduce the crop availability. That will push up the price and the cost of doing business. We have to have better intelligence. We have to have better prevention, treatment, and education, because people who take these drugs get addicted. They can successfully be rehabilitated if there's services available to do that. They also can have different levels of sanctions. We have to go after the money. And that's something that happened in 1978 when we said you could attach assets derived from, traceable to, or intended to be used for a violation of the narcotic laws. And that takes one big bite out of the cartels. We need to do a much more aggressive job of that overseas where those crops are grown. We're doing it in the U.S., but in Mexico and in Colombia, in Afghanistan, the cartels are making their money and they're not losing their assets.
David?
You know, the war on drugs has been going on, I think, since 1968.
Since 1914.
Well, as I recall, under political terms, Richard Nixon talking about this. And there have been, you know, expansion of our drug laws, expansion of drug enforcement. We've had better drug enforcement, but we're not going to be able to, you know, cut off the supply problem. You cut it off here, it'll come from here. You cut it off there, it'll come from here. And I agree with everything that Peter said about education, treatment, et cetera, but we've failed in cutting off the supply of illegal narcotics, and it is fueling terrorists. And I think that we have to consider legalizing drugs for that reason.
I want to ask. This is
not just. It's been a long struggle, and we failed, and we're still going to continue to fail.
I'm going to put this story. It's an anecdotal story. Once upon a time, a couple of years ago, I was in a cab. The cab driver was obviously not from the United States. He identified himself from Mexico. I did not ask whether he was legal or not, but we talked about his family. And his family, his teenage sons, he said he had two teenage sons, they were not living in Chicago. And he said, I don't have them living in Chicago because it's too dangerous for them to live in Chicago. So they are living in, and he named the town in Mexico, which I was not familiar with. He said, to go there, he said, because when you're in a gang in Mexico, you're not muscled to become part of, to engage in illegal activity, and you're not asked to engage in drug trafficking. And when you're in a gang in Chicago, you are. And here was someone who came to the United States because he needed a job,
yeah.
And yet he had to separate himself from his family because of the difference between our mindset and the mindset that exists in Mexico. So here's my question, and anybody can answer this. Can anyone verify that there is less pressure if you're growing up in Mexico and you're a young teenager to be engaged in at least illegal gang activity than if you're growing up in Lake County, Illinois? Sheriff?
I think so. You know, Mexico is still predominantly a peaceful country, and you get outside of that Juarez area and some of the border spots, there's not a ton of violence in the country of Mexico. With regards to here, as I mentioned before, Bruce, and I was the head of gang crimes for the state of Illinois under Attorney General Jim Ryan, and I've been in this battle for a long time. And I can tell you, you don't join a street gang for any other reason than to sell narcotics, make money off of it, get the women that come with that business, and in essence, the machismo of violence in enforcing and protecting territories. That's the magnet. It's not any social club, what have you. And so if a young person joins a street gang, I've told our communities that in terms of the street gangs, they have declared war on our society, and we in turn have declared war back on them. And what that means is it's not racial profiling, but if we know an individual is a member of a street gang, I don't care if they're Latino, black, or white, if they make a wrong turn or what have you, and you would give virtually every other person a pass on that instance, you don't give them a pass. You look for whatever conceivable lawful reason you can to stop their car, to get a peek inside, to do whatever you can to rid them in terms of their terrorist activities from out of Lake County, get them shipped off to DOC, and get them removed from our community as quickly as possible. And that's what we do.
I think.
You're one of the leading counties in the United States for deporting people, are you not?
We are. Absolutely, we are recognized by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They came up on their national media tour. They chose one agency locally, and that was the Lake County Sheriff's Office as the premier local federal partnership in terms of everything that we do to make sure that anybody that should be deported is flagged and is sent out of here.
Bruce, I just want to commend the sheriff on his work, but also respond to what David said about
30
legalizing
seconds.
Drugs.
We're running out of time.
Legalizing drugs would create a community, many communities of very addicted people. The drugs work. They're dangerous. They're not healthy. They are very, very, very scary stuff. And legalization is not going to create a peaceful world because the drugs that you'd legalize at, say, 10%, people would want to have at 20%. Legalize cocaine, they'd want crack. Legalize low dosage heroin, they want the highest stuff. So you'll end up with an illegal traffic anyway.
We have to say farewell. We're going to continue in the next hour. Peter, you have to leave us at the end of this hour, so we thank you very much for joining us. Peter Bensinger, former head of the DEA. Also, Mark Curran has been the sheriff of Lake County, still is the sheriff of Lake County. David Sirt also joins us. David and Mark Curran will be back in the next hour. We're also going to be joined by an expert on the MS-13 street gang in Los Angeles. I'm Bruce Dumont. We'll be back. If you're listening to us on radio, if you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Lake County, Illinois Sheriff Mark Curran, attorney David Serta, and gang investigator William Dunn, author of The Gangs of Los Angeles. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our program coming to you from the SiriusXM studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btb@museum.tv. That's btb@museum.tv. We have been talking about crime and drugs and whether or not there is a relationship between drugs in the drug trafficking in the United States and the illegal immigration issue, and also tying into a discussion of gangs in the country. And one of the most violent gangs is a group called MS-13. They originally came from El Salvador, and they are now allegedly 50,000 strong. They allegedly operate in 243 cities. And a man who's written a book on the subject is a veteran street gang investigator for the Los Angeles Police Department. He is the author, William Dunn, author of the book, The Gangs of Los Angeles. Mr. Dunn, thanks for joining us on Beyond the Beltway.
Hi, how are you today, Bruce?
We're fine. I want to begin by talking about the numbers that I've just put on the record. 50,000, 243 cities. Are those figures that you would subscribe to?
It's always hard to keep a track of just how many people are actually in the gang. I've seen the numbers here in Los Angeles go from as many as 4,000 to all the way into the 700s. So it's difficult to say actually how many hardcore gang members there are in the country, but with MS-13, Mara Salvatrucha, let's just say, yeah, it's in the tens of thousands, definitely.
Now, when you look at the makeup of this gang, how many of them are American citizens, and how many of them are illegal immigrants from some nation, whether it be Mexico or any other Central American country?
Well, I've been dealing with the gang since about 1990. And it's very rare that you are going to run into one who was actually born here or is a citizen. They mainly come from El Salvador, but they're also heavily from Honduras and Guatemala.
And what do they come here for?
I think it initially, when they first started coming here back in about the early 80s, 83, 82, they were fleeing a lot of the turmoil down in Central America. Some of them were just peasants that were coming up here fleeing the fighting. Other ones were actual fighters who were coming up here who, you know, were either wanted in their country or had been in the fights and were just tired of the fighting, and they just wanted to escape what was going on in Central America.
And have they brought violence to America?
Well, you know, when they first got up here, the area that they moved into, which is the Rampart area, it's an area that's down near downtown around Echo Park. They were moved into an area that was pretty gang intense. And I think that a lot of the young guys, when they were going to high school, they came into conflict with some of the gang members. And they themselves began getting involved in the gangs. Now, that's among the teenagers. You also did have a lot of the guerrillas who came up here, the guys who were the fighters. And with them, they brought with them a certain type of violence.
David Serta joins us in studio. David, let me ask you, is there something unique about gangs and Hispanics? Is there more prevalence in the Hispanic community than in the African-American community than in the white community? There are certainly gangs in all areas, but is there anything unique about the cultural or social fabric of the Hispanic culture that makes it different in any way?
I think the Hispanic culture is more family-oriented than many cultures, and this would be against what the Hispanic culture is about. There's problems across cultures with people in gangs. So I don't think that, you know, he's talking about El Salvadorian immigrants, and there were tens of thousands who fled that country. You know, this country, you know, supplied arms to a faction there, and we shouldn't have been supplying the arms there, trying to impose our will there, and it just fueled the violence there. And a lot of those people left, but they, the majority of those people who came to this country did not get caught up in illegal activities. There's a percentage who did, and the author's talking about those people.
Mm-hmm. Sheriff Curran, what's your take on whether or not there's any significant difference in the cultural draw of those that you run into as the sheriff of Lake County, Illinois?
Right. Bruce, I think if we were to look at street gangs and percentage-wise, the overwhelming majority are either African-American or Latino. African-American, as we can say, as a matter of factly, have had problems in terms of the family structure and the absence of a male in the home. As a result of that, they're searching. When there's not a dad there, you have young men looking for that older father figure, and in essence, the void is filled oftentimes with street gangs, and street gangs, as I said, are a horrible cancer. With regards to Latinos as well, I would agree, amongst the warmest people to walk the face of the earth, God bless them, and we need to distinguish between coming here legally and illegally, though, because I think sometimes when you come here illegally, it begins a slippery slope. There's we're a nation of laws. There's a rule of law. When we cease to be that, we will cease to be the United States of America. We're headed in the direction of the Roman Empire. There's no question about it. We need to get back to, you know, in essence, enforcing the borders, making sure that people come here legally. People are standing in embassy lines all over the world trying to come here by lawful means. We are a nation of laws, and we need to get back to that. And that's the whole problem. So, obviously, as a result of the drug trade, we have people that are running in here solely to commit crime.
Mr. Dunn, would you agree with that, that those that come here, at least that are members of the M13 street gang, are coming here just for no good?
Well, you know, one thing that let me just jump back real quick. One thing that I do point out in my book is going back to the roots of our country, you know, some of our first street gangs, they were Irish street gangs. So gangs really come more about when there's a poverty situation, there's a disenfranchisement from the rest of society. So you're seeing a lot of that at this time with the Central American community here in the U.S. You know, they're a newer community, and they're still trying to get the foothold here. So that's why you're seeing something like an MS-13 rising. Now, when you are talking about MS gang members coming to the U.S., and they're already gang members, you know, say from Central America, yeah, they're definitely coming up here for no good. They're in MS because they want to be criminals.
We have to pause. 1-800-723-8029. We're talking about crime and street crime and drug trafficking in America tonight. We have lots of callers on the line. We will bring them into our conversation when we roll on from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. From Sacramento, California to El Paso, Texas, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8029 is the phone number. Let's go to Henry, listening to us on KTSM in El Paso, Texas, which is not far from the problem area down there, the Mexican border. Henry, nice to have you with us tonight.
How y'all doing? Hey, we just had our trials here for the Azteca members. They're going to be sentenced next month. The social worker that was working with them, she's 60 years old. She just got sentenced this week. They were the gang that was distributing for El Chapo in Juarez, the one that's fighting for La Plaza there, for the turf. Just real quick to remind anybody who's listening, you can stream Channel 44 of Juarez, Mexico on your net, and you can actually watch the killings as they're going on in progress, live, unedited. These cartels actually target when the station goes on, and they're actually doing the killings then.
So they are killing live on television to spread fear amongst the population?
Oh, yeah. Channel 44, Juarez, Mexico, just stream it. These are Mountain Standard Time, 6 in the morning, 12, 4:30 and 10 o'clock at night.
And what has been the impact on the crime rate in El Paso? How much of that has spilled over into the streets of El Paso?
You know what? It really hasn't spilled over. Like, you know, we're getting shot up over here. That hasn't happened yet. Yeah, we got our Governor Perry, who wants to put soldiers on the boots on the ground here on the line. Everything's being thrown, tossed around like crazy. There's an impressive movement of soldiers and federal agents in Juarez right now. They're at every street corner right now, and they're getting more. I think another 10,000 landed this weekend.
Henry, and, in your view, as someone who lives in El Paso, Texas, you're about as close to it, at least based on the callers tonight, as closer than anybody else. What, in your view, should be done to stem the tide and to win the battle?
Okay, here's the problem. We are the problem. We are the one that's creating the demand. We have addicts over here like crazy. We're the ones creating the demand. Also, we do take the weapons over there. With that money, we got people over here buying weapons for the cartel. We are the ones that are supplying the weapons. Calderon, Presidente Calderon, brought out on President Obama this weekend. He lashed out on them on Thursday and Friday on the Hispanic news like you wouldn't believe. Hillary Clinton, she needs now to go over there and stem the tide on this. La Merida, the money for the Merida, remember that? It got cut $150 million, right, on the budget. You hear about that, right?
Right. So okay, what are the types of things that we have to do to basically stop the you talked about stemming the tide. You're talking about breaking our addiction to drugs.
Yeah, we need
in
to
the United States.
Yeah. Juarez right now, Channel 4 reported last week, 44 in Juarez reported they have already documented 50,000 addicts, and it starts with marijuana, meth, and cocaine. That's where it starts. For anybody who's saying that if we legalize it, it's going to go away, it ain't. Because you do create addicts with marijuana. It's showing up in Juarez right now. That's how they start. They start with marijuana, and there goes the meth and cocaine.
Mr. Dunn, I want to ask you a question. What forms of drugs is MS-13 involved in? All forms of drugs?
All of it.
Mainly what I see them doing is methamphetamine and marijuana. They're not that much into rock cocaine, although they'll deal anything that makes money. But mainly they're getting into the methamphetamine.
And to what extent have they reached out to all, let's say, suburban and rural areas surrounding Los Angeles? If they're in 243 cities, it seems to me that there's hardly any city, at least within the sound of my voice, certainly in California, that doesn't have some problem. And I'm wondering whether you think that is a fair statement to make.
Well, MS-13 is not the most organized gang. They're one of the most violent, but they're not the most organized gang. I mean, there are actually gangs out there that are dealing an awful lot more drugs. They're not that skilled, I think, at drug dealing, although they do have, do a lot of drug dealing. They're more about gang banging. What the guy's talking about down, this thing with Ciudad Juarez, that's a very organized drug trafficking that's coming across the border. And those are going to a lot more of the Sereno gangs, that group, going to the Bloods along the East Coast. MS-13, one of the reasons that we've always had so many problems with them is they're more about the violence, they're more about the partying. They're not as much about the drugs as a lot of the other gangs.
Are they political in any way?
In the very beginning, they were hooked up with FMLN, Farabundo Martí Liberación Nacional, the movement that was down there in El Salvador in the late 70s, early 80s. But they've gotten away from that. Most of the older guys who were guerrillas and who were fighting are either dead, they're in jail, they're living on Skid Row. They're not really out there gangbanging anymore. What we're seeing now is a new generation of MS-13 that's out there. They're younger guys, and they're guys who don't really have the ties to the wars that the original guys fled.
Let's go to Jerry, listening to us in Knoxville on line 5, WNOX. Go ahead, Jerry. You said there's signs of MS-5, or 13 rather, in Tennessee?
Yes, there's. We're in Evanston,
I'm about halfway between Knoxville and Nashville, up in the hills. I used to live in Southern California, and I used to live in San Pedro. I'm sure the author of the book, I'm sure he knows exactly where that is. And anyway, there's MS-13 ridings up here. There's a chicken plant where they do a lot of work, a lot of illegal aliens here. And it's been 7, 8, 9 years ago, where there were 5 people from Guatemala or Honduras, wherever it was, or El Salvador, where they were killed up there. And they weren't robbed. I mean, they were just shot dead up in their house. They never found out who did it. A lot of people thought it was somebody down there who they might have owed money to and never paid. And they, I don't know, these people are dangerous. The people back here don't realize what is coming if we don't do something now. And personally, I think they just ought to be shot on the spot because they are dangerous people.
Sheriff,
yep.
Shot on the spot, that's pretty strong. Even for a conservative Republican, that's pretty strong.
Right. I mean, I'm not even a death penalty advocate, so I don't see any benefit there. But just along those lines, Bruce, you can see it in your callers, just the level of knowledge and what have you, that many people out there know what's going on with regards to illegal immigration and the gang situation and what have you. And I get it from people on the street. Yet, despite that fact, it's not discussed on the floors of the General Assembly throughout this country. It's not discussed in Congress. And in essence, where Eric Holder said that we were a nation of cowards because we don't discuss race, I think, there's some truth in that to a percentage of America.
But
discuss illegal immigration.
But let me ask you this question.
I disagree. Illegal
immigration is one of the hot button issues, certainly on talk radio for the last 5 or 6 years. And yet, when you look at where illegal immigration has been a significant issue in a debate, in many cases, members who have run for political office in Arizona and other parts, they have not been successful.
No.
The ones that have played that card the most significantly have not been successful. And certainly in the Republican presidential nomination, Tom Tancredo, who was the most vociferous on that issue, he was one of the first to drop out. There was no traction. So is this one of these issues that people like to talk about, but because of the connection with providing services that many illegal immigrants provide, like picking food and cleaning up and all the other things that are service economy, is this part of the hypocrisy of the American voter?
No question. You hit it on the head, Bruce, with regards to an unskilled worker in terms of the services that they take out of the country versus what they contribute to the GNP, it's a complete lose, the way America's structured right now. So it costs the country a lot more to have these workers than we benefit. Yet what you have transpiring oftentimes in the Republican tent and why they don't see it as an issue, you have people that make money off of illegal immigrants where cash is paid, benefits aren't given, and the fact that the guy shows up at the hospital without any insurance, what have you, well, that's not his issue. It's the rest of the country's issue to swallow.
David, your response.
I disagree. I think that there have been a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment on the floor of the House. There's always talk about this building a bigger wall, trying to line up people along the borders and totally misunderstanding the problem with illegal immigration. People can come to this country illegally and just overstay their visas and then become illegal immigrants.
But building the border. I mean, I know you don't like the idea of the wall, but
it doesn't work.
But walls do work. Based on a report that I saw a couple of weeks ago on NBC. I mean, the number of people being picked up every Saturday is greatly increased throughout the week, and that walls historically work. The Berlin Wall worked. The Wall of China worked. Show me a wall that has not worked.
Well, Berlin Wall worked because there was it was small and there was intense observation and oversight over that wall. You cannot do that with the United States, with the Mexican border and with the Canadian border, and because people can simply fly here legally and then stay. 9 out of 10 people who try to get into this country illegally eventually make it here.
But they,
so that is,
but they don't make it by hopping on a plane. We do have to pause. Okay. I'm going to get response from everybody, including Bill Dunn, who joins us. He is author of the book, The Gangs of Los Angeles. Bill, can you stick with us for another segment or so?
Oh, of course.
Very good. We've got lots of callers on the line, 1-800-723-8029. From coast to coast and border to border on America's great radio stations, as well as Sirius and XM Satellite Radio, I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly with calls. From Youngstown, Ohio to Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. Joining us tonight, David Sirta is here. He is an attorney, and also Mark Kern is here. He is the Republican sheriff of Lake County, elected as a Democrat but switched parties. And also joining us from his home in Los Angeles is William Dunn. He is a current and veteran street gang investigator, author of The Gangs of Los Angeles. He's been with the L.A. Police Department for a long time, and he is an expert on MS-13. What does MS stand for?
It stands for Mara Salvatrucha. Basically, it means a big gang of Salvadorans look out. The Mara has to do with a group. Salva has to do with Salvadoran. Trucha is like a street slang for lookout.
How aggressive are they, MS-13, how aggressive are they in maybe recruiting illegal immigrants who come to the United States, and have jobs? I mean, are they being recruited?
Well, yeah. Anybody who's basically from that community that's in that area, if they're a youngster, Mara Salvatrucha is very active at recruiting. They like to keep their hood up. You know, they talk about going out and, you know, bringing people into the hood. A lot of youngsters who grow up in an area where there is a high concentration of Mara Salvatrucha are definitely at risk of being forced into the gang, either through violence or just through, you know, being buddied up to, being made friends with, and slowly being brought into the fold.
But you think, again, it is primarily the attraction is gang banging, not drugs?
At least in the beginning. The one thing that I do see with the gang that's different than, say, some of the other gangs is most of these guys are kids who are basically kind of orphans or kind of street kids. So it's more about bringing a cohesiveness of a family, a bunch of group of kids who just don't have parents who are really monitoring them or watching them. But then once they're in there, once the family thing starts, then they start looking at making money. That's when the street robberies begin, breaking into cars, and then it's after that that you start see them moving into moving drugs and such. The reason I don't think that they have as strong a drug ties as some of the other street gangs is because they just don't seem to have the same connections. They don't have the older guys who continue on into the gang into their 30s and 40s and who just, you know, have kids who also join the gangs. They're not a multi-generational street gang like a lot of traditional street gangs.
Okay.
So they don't have the drug hookup.
So I just had
David Sirta.
A quick question, Bill. What percentage of their money is generated from drug money and what percentage from other crimes, would you say?
Well, you know, the one thing that I do see about Mara Salvatrucha is a lot of the guys actually have jobs. I mean, even the hardcore guys, they're one of the few gangs that I see that really are willing to work.
So legitimate
probably,
jobs?
You know, huh? I'm sorry?
They have legitimate jobs and are gangbanging on the side?
Well, I don't know how much you would say legitimate, but they're willing to work construction, things like that.
That's a legitimate job.
What? You know, I know that when we out here started with our injunctions and really began hitting them hard with, you know, the injunction service and all that, and made it a crime basically to be part of the Mara Salvatrucha gang. We saw a large outflux of them to places where there was a lot of construction going on, North Carolina, Virginia, and then we began getting the calls from those places too, asking us about these gangs. So these guys were traveling to places where there were menial labor type jobs, that type of stuff.
We've got somebody calling, Bill. We've got somebody calling from Boston. Tom is listening to us on WTAG, out of Massachusetts. And Tom, go ahead. You're on the air.
Bruce, I'm enjoying the show, and
thank you.
Obviously the comments are right on the mark.
I'm reframing this a little bit, and I think that a lot has to be put on the demand side, which is, I know the Republicans won't like this, but small business owners are really enjoying the fruits of the cheap labor, and as long as that continues, they have a blind eye on, you know, what goes on regarding state and federal income taxes by employing illegal aliens. I work for a company, and half the employees are from one particular country, and they are here illegal, and they do it because it's a heavy, labor-intensive business, and there are high profits to be made in a down economy. So as long as the business owners aren't negative impacted by this, I think it's going to continue, and I don't think it's just putting up fences across the border. I think it's really until you tap the business owners and make it a penalty for them to employ these people, I don't think you're going to get at the root of the problem.
Sheriff, how aggressive have you been in trying to root out companies in Lake County, Illinois, that repeatedly hire illegal immigrants?
Bruce, we work with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement in terms of sweeps, but they're always targeted towards gangs and violent members of society. They have not been targeted towards businesses at all, and the change in administration—
Should they be, in your view?
In my view, certainly. I mean, it seems to make sense that we need to go after businesses that are, in essence, paying these people under the table or helping them in terms of getting dummy SS numbers and not providing benefits. And it de-escalates the wages of everyone else, and it's a terrible greed that has gone in the direction of lawlessness.
But what do you say to the people who live in your county or who are listening to the broadcast this evening? You say, you know, but this person, you know, they're getting, you know, they're mowing my lawn, they're doing my landscaping, yeah. they put my new patio in. I really don't care where they're from. The reality is they've done good work. They're reliable. They show up on time.
Yeah.
They have all the positive things that you want in an employee, and they happen to be illegal. If I can save a little money on them, good for me.
And Bruce, you're hitting the nail on the head exactly as to why sometimes I feel like I'm on an island by myself talking about these issues, because there's a lot of people that are described right there, but. As you see, you know, we're not talking about pathway to citizenship. We're not talking about amnesty. We're not talking about anything at all with regards to illegal immigration. So all these people out there that David's talking about, they're sitting there in limbo. And, that, you know, for many of them, is that fair? Yes, businesses have dangled a carrot, in essence, by making more money than they could make back in Mexico. And in essence, they come over here, and it is bad for us because we are a nation of laws. We cease to be a nation of laws when we allow this to go on.
But we have to address it. We were a nation of laws in the 1920s, and about 85 to 90% of the people in this nation of laws were violating the Prohibition Act. They were violating the Volstead Act because, you know what? They wanted to have a drink. How does that differ from the guy that wants a Hispanic to mow their lawn and is going to give them next to nothing for doing it? David.
It's true. I think that we should make it easier for people to become legal citizens. And I think that what the person that Bruce was describing is a person who does want to become a U.S. citizen. And they are, by the way, already paying taxes here. They may not be paying, they may not get Social Security, but they are paying state, you know, they're paying sales taxes when they buy things at our stores. They are working, they're reducing prices here for goods, and people are paying taxes on those goods. They are
And they're receiving hospital care if they go into a hospital?
And that is true. But you can quantify the amount of money that hospitals are paying for caring for undocumented workers, but it's hard to quantify, in a state's balance sheet, how much money is generated by in sales taxes, in support of real estate taxes and business taxes. So it's you can easily point out this is the money that this hospital is losing, but it's offset by other
funds. Sheriff Kern.
Yeah, and With regards to the prohibition, and, you know, I'm of 100% Irish descent, and that's the reason for the green tie today, I don't think that we can equate the two. When we think of in terms of our security, economic security, there is no greater threat to the absence of borders. There's no greater threat to the absence of a legal immigration, a legal process in terms of immigrants coming to this country. There's no greater threat with regards to security from terrorist activity to street gangs to the poison that's pumped into the streets of our communities. These are very, very serious issues, Bruce, and we need people of character, and we need principled people in Washington, D.C. to address these issues, to take stances on these issues, and we just can't continue to run from them and hide from them for fear of we may lose small business people on this end, we may lose illegal immigrant supporters on this end. Forget about it.
But if you go through a presidential election, and in the general election, the subject doesn't even come up. The subject that would make most, you know, talk show phones ring off the hook, that subject does not come up in the general election, period. And it didn't come up years ago when Bob Dole was running for president at a time when the governor of California was getting reelected on basically aggressively pursuing that issue.
Right.
So what's going to be different 4 years from now than today?
Right. And you're exactly right, Bruce. And while we were on break, David, myself and you talked about the fact that adding a factor in aggravation is something that I'm going to be recommending in terms of the Illinois compiled statutes.
I'm going to let you explain that when we come back, because I know David's got a differing view on that. 1-800-723-8289. Still callers on the line. We'll hear from them when we roll on. As also joining us is William Dunn, author of the book The Gangs of Los Angeles. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and Sheriff Kern, you were about to make a point about something that you want to move on quickly and describe the audience what you're trying to do.
Certainly, Bruce. One of the things that I'm in dialogue with members of the Illinois General Assembly regarding is a proposal where we would add as a sentencing factor an aggravation if somebody was here illegally. So as it stands right now, if somebody committed a crime and the judge looked at the fact that they had come in here solely to commit crimes from another country and they considered their illegal status, that would be a factor that they were not able to consider, and the sentence would get reversed for that, their having considered that. We've looked at it from a constitutional perspective. We are aware of the fact that in other jurisdictions, illegal immigrants have been denied day-for-day credits. And it has survived the 14th Amendment argument, and we believe that this would be lawful legislation.
David, your response?
I don't know. I think the law is not necessary. If we have a drug law, we should enforce the drug law and the drug sentencing law, and that's enough. It seems to me just reaching out for, you know, appearing tougher on crime when you already have the law there to impose the penalty.
Let's go to Kim listening to us in Chicago on WLS, standing by for a long time. Kim, go ahead.
Hi, Bruce. Great show as always.
Thank you.
As a psychiatrist, let me quickly suggest four levels of intervention that could significantly reduce gangs, drugs, and illegal immigration and save money in the process. The first is if you have extended after-school programs for at-risk youth so that they're literally off the streets, not available to be involved in gangs. Secondly, if the parents, if they're on welfare, they're mandated into jobs as well as into rehab where it's necessary. The third, if folks coming out of jail are in extended probation or parole so that they have to be in jobs again and they have to be monitored for drugs. And fourthly, if you come in and are caught in illegal immigration, rather than just getting sent back, you spend 6 months on farm labor for the first time, 12 months the second time. You know, sooner or later, people get the idea that it doesn't pay, and you're actually saving tax dollars in the process in all four levels of intervention.
Your response, David?
I agree with the first two proposals. With the third one, extended probation, seems good. There's, as I understand it, there's more intense supervision, more random drug testing right now, which is very good. But tying their probation to employment, I think, might be too severe because people can't get jobs.
Let's go to Greg in South Texas listening to us on KLBJ on Line 7. Go ahead.
How you doing, sir? Good evening.
Very good. Nice to hear from you tonight.
Thanks for taking my call. This what we have tonight is I was just wanting to comment. Live down in South Texas, and we see a lot of traffic coming in and out of Mexico, and a lot of illegals, and we see a lot of drugs on the highway. It's moved into our community real strong, and it's gotten to the point to where I think my family and I are going to relocate to a different area.
Well, it's got to be very dangerous.
Sad, but it's our problem. It's the people. Your neighbors are buying the drugs. Otherwise, the drugs wouldn't be going there.
It's like it gets back to your neighbors may be buying the drugs, and your other neighbors may be getting their landscape done for less than they might pay someone else. I guess my question to you, and this I want to get a sense of. From you, Bill Dunn, I'm going to ask you to sort of put on your international hat, not necessarily as it relates to a street gang investigator, but again, as you have seen the economic situation in the country begin to slide rather significantly, I mean, do you notice an increase in crime on your watch?
Well, violent crime is going down, and I think that's pretty well seen in the stats in L.A., but what a lot of people are missing is that the gangs are moving into identity theft and the credit card fraud and stuff like that. We have a thing out here called the Street Terrorism Enforcement and Prevention Act. And there's a number of different crimes that have been added throughout the years to that act. It began with just murder, shootings, kidnappings, rape, things like that. Well, we just added identity theft to it, which means that if we have a gang member who's involved in that type of crime, and it's done in furtherance of the gang, we can add sentencing enhancements to them because of that crime. And we're done that because we are seeing identity theft kind of going through the roof, and definitely the gangs are involved in that.
Let's go to John in Glenview. He has a military response to our problem. Go ahead, John.
Yes. What President Bush did for 3 months, he closed the border successfully using APC carriers, but unfortunately they had to be recalled to Iraq, and as soon as they left, the border became porous again. Closing the border can be done and was done successfully, and that should be priority to begin to slow down this trafficking. That's all I have to say, really.
All right, let's go to Eduardo in Chicago. I think he wants to second that idea. Go ahead, Eduardo.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea to send the Army because I don't think the Minutemen is going to hack it by itself. Identity theft is a good thing because we just had a story about an illegal immigrant getting free medical services, which contributes to the high health costs in America.
All right, let's go to Les listening to us and driving on I-88 on WLS. He's got a question on the number of illegal immigrants in prisons. Go ahead, Les.
Yeah, I'm wondering for the individual from Lake County, what is the percentage of those in jail for violent crime? What percentage of that population are illegals?
Well, we had a half of our murders during a couple-year radius. 14 out of murders, and 7 of them were from illegal immigrants. Those numbers, 50% there. But generally speaking, we're looking at about 20%.
Mark Curran, thank you very much. He is the Republican sheriff of Lake County. That's just north of Chicago. Joins us this evening. David Serta has been our attorney. Thank you very much for being with us as well. Our thanks to Peter Bensinger. And also to the author of The Gangs of Los Angeles, William Dunn, a member of the Los Angeles Police Department, the current street gang investigator. We thank him very much for being with us. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. Our thanks to Tom Veracruz, Patrick Johnson, and Ben Stewart for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week at the same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.